It's time for the 1080 The Fan Player of the Game on the Power Rinse Game of the Week.
I don't know how to put this, but I'm kind of a big deal.
Stay with us also for the Les Schwab Tires post-game scoreboard show, including the Sherway Building Center's Clark County Report. Here again are Jason Swigard and Andrew Nimick.
Back here at West Salem High School, where the Lake Oswego Lakers take down the Titans 42-21 on opening night. And there was a little debate early on. Malcolm Williams had three interceptions in the first half, but once Casey Filkins got it cranked up, there was no question who our Sherway Outdoor Building and Remodeling Center's player of the game would be. Filkins finishes with 18 carries for 212 yards, three touchdowns, threw in two catches for 36 yards. We'll overlook the couple of punts, I guess.
How dare you? You name him player of the game, and then you bring up his two shanked kicks. How dare you, sir? Casey Filkins was incredible. Remember, this game was 14-7 with about a minute left in the second quarter, and he took a ball, just a carry, I think it was just a dive up the middle.
Yeah, he bounced
it
out.
Bouncing it outside. Next thing you know, it's a 72-yard touchdown run, and we go into halftime tied at 14-all. Then he gets on the board for the first score of the second half with a 52-yard touchdown run, tacks on a 28 or 29-yard touchdown run again in the third quarter to open this thing up. West Salem was ahead, and Lake Oswego was having a really hard time throwing the ball, and frankly, they never did figure that out. But Casey Filkins took the game over and made sure it didn't matter. Not only was he the player of the game, but he also showed just how truly special he was. And everybody here is big-time prospect, maybe the number one prospect in the state of Oregon, a Pac-12 running back slot receiver commit. But it's a different thing when you see his speed, when you see his vision between the tackles, when you see his ability to set up defenders to get by them, that you really say, wow, this Casey Filkins kid is special. And we got a chance to see it firsthand, again, as you mentioned, other than his punting ability.
Well, and he was just an offensive threat. They didn't have to use him defensively. I think they're hoping they don't have to use him defensively for this team as they're breaking guys in. And with Williams back there and Dukart back there and Hudson, there's probably not a lot of need for him unless there's an injury at some point in the season. I thought the young linebackers did very well after they figured out, you know, they had to settle in a little bit. But you look for Lake Oswego, Zach Wagner, Tyler Miller, Mahan. Connor Willingans is the one holdover. He's the senior that kind of anchors that crew. They're a little undersized, but using their speed, they started to put pressure on Jackson Lowry, making him throw it before he wanted to once they were able to kind of figure out what the game plan for the Titans was.
Yeah, and so much of being a good linebacker is having the instincts to pursue the ball or read the play before things really fully develop and to trust your instincts. And when you're playing an opponent that has a brand-new quarterback, brand-new running back, brand-new receivers, it's really hard to get a scouting report where you definitively know what you're going to do. So those linebackers kind of have to guess a little bit or at least wait and read things and maybe take an extra half second to decide where they need to go and where they need to be to pursue the football or to pursue the play. Once they figured out that West Salem was going to have a really hard time throwing the ball, they were all able to pin their ears back and be really physical in shooting gaps at the line of scrimmage. And when they were able to slow down that West Salem rushing attack on first and second down, it really set them up and the secondary up nicely on third and long to have a really successful night. And you said it, once they figured out the game plan and they gained some confidence and they were able to just react and be aggressive, that young linebacking core really did a nice job today, particularly starting about late second quarter on. They did a really nice job.
We look at some of the other stats here. For J.J. Wooden in his Laker debut, 7 of 12, 81 yards, a touchdown, two interceptions. They tried to go to him early to see if he could get a rhythm, threw a couple of passes short over the middle that were picked off. They went to Casey Filkins, built up a lead, and then kind of just let him calm down and get into a rhythm. He started throwing more of those shorter passes. You mentioned Jackson Laurent there saying he's just can't try and worry about the home run play, that you've got plenty of playmakers there. assess the field, see who's got the matchup that you like, and get the ball to him.
Yeah, I mean, he really struggled with that, and that was the scouting report on J.J. Wooden coming in. Would he try to do too much? And the answer turned out to be, at least in the first half, yes. And he did throw a touchdown pass to Joe Hudson. That was literally just a big cushion, so he just turned and threw just a little hitch to him right away. Hudson's able to shake a defender and score for a 10-yard gain. The other big chunk play of the night was just, frankly, a little bubble screen or a halfback screen to Casey Philkins that he took for 40 yards. The other thing, Jackson Laurent, and again, he was the starter last year taking over for Jake Ducard. He ended up being first team All-State in his 1 year at starter at Lake Oswego, led them to a state title. The other thing he said is when you get one-on-one coverage with Ducard or Hudson, don't be afraid to take advantage, even if you've made some mistakes. And we actually did see that. At one point in the third quarter, Wooden just unleashed one down the field when Ducard was in one-on-one coverage. Ducard got by his guy. Would have been about a 50-yard touchdown catch, and it just went through Ducard's hands. So as rough as the stats look for J.J. Wooden, and frankly, he did have a rough night. His best throw of the night ended up being an incompletion that would have been a 50-yard touchdown. You add that into his numbers, and suddenly it doesn't look quite as shaky as what it looks like on paper.
Elsewhere, if we look at the West Salem numbers, if you look at quarterback Jackson Lowry, 10 of 23, 120 yards, one touchdown, three interceptions. He had the 45-yarder to Bennett there. Powell caught three, but only for 21 yards.
Two touchdowns for Lowry. He hits that deep one earlier in the game, and then he hits a slant. He threw a touchdown on a ball that should have been picked. Ducart would love to have that one back. He broke on the ball so hard to try to take it to the house for six that it went through his hands. The receiver caught it, turned around, and there was nobody there. He could have walked into the end zone for a big gain, and obviously he was able to score on that play. But the one thing I really liked about Lowry, a young quarterback, he throws a touchdown. He throws three interceptions, three picks. In the second half, the big thing that you didn't see from him all game was throwing between the numbers with confidence, lasering it in. He would throw lobs down the field. He'd overthrow his receivers, or he'd throw balls to the sidelines that only his receivers could catch. But he wasn't comfortable throwing between the numbers. It was really refreshing. Late in the game, he threw a slant over the middle that just buzzed right past the linebacker for a touchdown. It was a beautiful throw and shows why Coach Stanley stuck with him and had confidence in him. This was a great learning experience for Jackson Lowry, and I know they lost this game and he threw three interceptions, but that slant allows him to end this game on a high note, saying there's some good takeaways here. Again, this is a West Salem team that lost tonight by three scores. I guarantee you they're going to be in the thick of it for the GVC title, and part of the reason is taking these lumps today, and instead of folding, guys like Lowry rising to the occasion, throwing another touchdown pass and making sure he ends this Friday night on a positive note.
Jacob Tinseth, the running back, 16 carries, 102 yards and a touchdown. Some of that came late, but he shows a lot of shiftiness. He's not a big back at 5'9", 175 pounds, but he showed really good vision at times and able to get out of tackles. You couldn't just get him down with an arm tackle, and I think he will progress. I think his progression along with Lowry's together, where they can kind of rely on each other and have some balance, will help both of them tremendously.
No doubt. You come into this game and you don't know what Lowry's going to be. You don't know what your running backs are going to be. And if Lowry throws a jump ball, he doesn't know which receivers under the Friday Night Lights will step up and go up and make a play versus kind of allowing it to be picked. Everything's an unknown. So to end the game saying, you know what, I saw some flashes from Lowry I really like, and we might down the road have ourselves an all-league running back. Well, it may not happen tonight, although he showed flashes, but by game three or four, you see a roadmap for this West Salem team to be balanced, to be able to throw the ball pretty well down the field and to the outside, occasionally throw it between the numbers, and then run the ball effectively, particularly given that their O-line played pretty well tonight. There's some really good signs for a West Salem team. Again, you lose 42-21, you lose by three scores, and yet the takeaway has to be for West Salem that there are some really good signs. And you talked to Coach Stanley before the game, and he said how excited he was to coach this group and how much he enjoyed coaching this group. And you see why. They're young kids that are willing to step up and battle against the number one team in the state, the reigning state champs, and be tied with them at halftime and battle through some lumps to end on a high note.
Well, and he's been through the wars before. He's had highly ranked teams, highly talented teams, but he he knows, I mean, even at this level, even more, that's one of the biggest criticisms of college. We have all these opinions of what teams are supposed to be when they hit the field week one, and when they don't live up to them, then we don't allow for the fact that they can improve and get better throughout the season. Certainly at the high school level, you mentioned McNary earlier, had a rough non-conference schedule. They got into league, cruised through league, and get themselves on a run. And the way that things are set up for the 6A level, 32 teams make the playoffs. They wanted to keep that. So you have some opportunity to play some tough competition early, maybe take some lumps with a young team. But when you get into league play, if you can develop and put it together, you still have an opportunity to be there at the end.
And we saw this just last year, as you mentioned. McNary started the year 0-5. They ended it 4-5, but those four wins were all in league. And so they won the GVC title after starting 0-5. It's doable. The GVC is the toughest league in the state to predict. There are always upsets that you never would expect. You'd never expect it. And it happened last year where West Salem thought they were going to thump McNary, and you saw the kids during the week tweeting about how badly they thought they'd beat McNary, and McNary beat them. And that's what happens sometimes in this GVC. So just because you start the year 0-1 or 0-2 and you're breaking in a young quarterback doesn't mean you're going to have a bad year. In fact, could mean you end up as league champs.
Well, still lots to be optimistic about for the Titans, but the Lakers took them a little bit to get going. They relied on the defending or the reigning 6A Offensive Player of the Year in Casey Filkins, who's headed to play for Justin Wilcox at Cal Berkeley. And once he got them going, seemingly everybody else settled down, and they started to look like the number one ranked team and defending 6A champion. They get the victory tonight to open the season 42-21. When we come back, we will get started with the Les Schwab Tires postgame scoreboard show. We're going to get out to our field reporters. Things coming down to the wire at West Lynn. Will Darkins is there. We'll see if anybody broke out in that Jefferson Southridge game. And then at the top of the hour, we will run through all the scores that we have at this point in the evening for you. We'll talk a little recruiting with Andrew as well before we wrap things up and get you all set up for your college football Saturday. Our final score, once again, Lake Oswego 42, West Salem 21. This has been the Power Rents Game of the Week on 1080 The Fan.
Starting defense, place at the table. What?
Breaking down 6A, 5A, 4A, and all the A's we can get to, with reporters spread out across tonight's top matchups in Oregon and Southwest Washington. This is the Les Schwab Tires Postgame Scoreboard Show, part of the Power Rents Game of the Week. With Andrew Nemec, here's your host for the Les Schwab Tires Postgame Scoreboard Show, Jason Swigart, on 1080 The Fan, the radio.com app, and 1080thefan.com.
Welcome back into West Salem High School, opening night of the 2019 season, as we saw number one ranked Lake Oswego take down number nine West Salem 42-21, a game that was tied at halftime, but Casey Filkins was unstoppable from the midpoint of the second quarter until they had built a 42-14 lead. We've got our scoreboard coming up at the top of the hour. Mike Lynch is in the 1080 The Fan studios helping us corral scores from around the state here. He'll also have a SportsCenter update for you, a couple of college football games of note, as well as any injury notes as well leading into the weekend. But right now, we want to get back out into the field to our reporters. It was a wild one at West Lynn, number 3 Central Catholic at number 5 West Lynn, and the Lions there. Will Darkins has been on the scene all night. How did this one turn out, Will?
Yeah, Swag, this was a wild one to say the least. So we go into the second half of play, and these two teams are tied up 21-21. They didn't score in the third quarter. Not at all. Nobody scores. And so we go to the very beginning of the fourth quarter, where number 21 Gavin Haynes punches it in from the 1 yard line for West Lynn, but they did miss the PAT. So they went up 27-21 at that point. Central Catholic, though, they fire back with a 6-play drive ending in Knighton hooking up with Silas Stone, a 5-yard out in the end zone. Central Catholic goes up 28-27 at this point. You think it's going to come down to the end here, nail biting, but Central Catholic, they took control of this game. It's Knighton to start again, this time on a 25-yard slant. This thing was long and skinny. Rams extend the lead 35-27. Westland tried to make a valiant effort at the end to score, but the Rams ended up running the clock out, and this really sets the tone for the rest of the season for Central Catholic and Westland. Reporting live from Westland High School, I'm Will Darkins for the Power Rents Game of the Week on 1080 The Fan.
Thank you very much, Will. And so Central Catholic there prevailing, getting the most out of this talent. They have a whole different task in front of them. We'll be there next Friday at Hillsborough Stadium as Eastside Catholic, the number one team at the 3A level, some think is the best team in the entire state of Washington and maybe a team for all time. When it's all said and done, you mentioned a few of the five-star Power 5 elite. Ohio State, Alabama, that's where some of these guys are going. What are the Rams in store for, and what will they need to be prepared for to not just get overwhelmed at the start of that game?
Well, both teams have remarkable skill position players. You look at Central Catholic, they've got Silas Starr, who's committed to Stanford, made a couple of big touchdown grabs tonight. But that Eastside Catholic squad has a running back in Sam Adams II, the son of Sam Adams, who was a defensive tackle for the Seattle Seahawks and others, the Ravens, during his career. Sam Adams II committed to Washington, but he had offers from Alabama and LSU as a running back and outside linebacker. G. Scott Jr. is committed to Ohio State as a wide receiver. I'm going to butcher his name. I just call him JTT. JT Tuimoloau is the number one prospect in the entire country for the class of 2021. And their offensive line and D-line measure in at 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", between 280 and 310 pounds. So both teams have really good skill guys. The problem is Central Catholic, and they've said this, the problem with their squad the last few years has been their O-line and D-line play has not been particularly good. It's probably been high school average for a program that typically, even when it's a down year, has an above-average O-line or D-line. They've not been good. Eastside Catholic has one of the best offensive and defensive lines in the nation. They're going to have to play the game of their lives up front to give four-year starter Cade Knighton time to throw. He's a quarterback, talented quarterback. He's only 5'10", so he's got to be able to see over that line and have time to roll out and find his receivers, to find Silas Starr, to find Calvin Souders, who's probably the most underrated receiver in the entire state. 6'3", 6'4", 180 pounds. Probably should be an FBS prospect. He's also got Elijah Elliott in the backfield. They're loaded with talent. But Eastside Catholic is just really, really phenomenally good.
Well, we can't wait to see him next Friday night. Let's get back out into the field. Our man, Rashad Taylor, covers the Portland Public Schools for us, PIL, and some of the Mount Hood schools tonight. He followed the Jefferson Democrats to Southridge, and it turned out to be an entertaining game. How did this one end up, Rashad?
Man, this game ended up much better than I think any of us kind of anticipated. You know, I just listened to Will say that, you know, in the first half, there wasn't much scoring, there wasn't a whole lot going, and then all of a sudden, both teams kind of came out of the second half and turned on the jet. After DeAndre Fair hit Trey Anderson for a nice 20-yard gain, he kept him for himself, and that gave him, put the Democrats right on the 3-yard line. From there, the number two running back in the nation for the class of 2021 walked in untouched for a score. That made the score 14-8, Democrats with 4:40 left in the third. Then Southridge, they needed a big defensive play. They needed something to happen, and they got one from Ethan Horner with an interception in the end zone. That's exactly what Southridge needed, because they end up getting the ball running golden after that. Derek Salinas hit Josh Kalo for a beautiful 40-yard gain to put them on the Skyhawks 3-yard line. And then two plays later, corner of the end zone, back to Kalo, and then after that, Salinas went and kicked the extra point. So he did a little bit of everything tonight. That made the score 14-15, Southridge with 10:45 left. And then that dude, Demir Collins, he struck again, this time for a 39-yard touchdown. That put the Democrats back up 22-15. Then they converted to two-point conversion. And then all of a sudden, you know what I'm saying, here comes Southridge, and they score again. They make the score 22 all. Demir Johnson happens to score again. The score is 28-22. Southridge had the ball with an opportunity to win with about 30 seconds left, but couldn't get it in the end zone. Jefferson just got into victory formation, and that is the end of the game. Jefferson comes in and beats Southridge at their home 28-22. Great game from Demir Collins. He had 100 yards on the ground. It looked really slow for him at first, but this is a great start for Jefferson and the Don Johnson era. Checking in from Southridge High School, Rashad Taylor for the Power Rent Game of the Week on 1080 The Fan.
All right. Thank you very much, Rashad. Always a big win when PIL schools can go on the road and get a win at a Metro League school. And for them, you know, they're often the forgotten, you know, one of the forgotten leagues when you talk about playoffs. For a while, Lincoln had it going. Participation numbers are an issue at some of those PIL schools, too. We had a game canceled tonight that was supposed to be played between, I think it was, let me look here.
I saw that, too, and now I'm struggling to come up with it. The PIL, while you're looking for it, the PIL in general, sadly, you got it?
Madison and Benson.
The PIL, sadly, is abysmal right now. There's just no other way to put it. They collectively have the turnout of a 3A or 4A school. Lincoln, proud Lincoln, multi-time league champion Lincoln. We went and covered a game there last year, and by midseason they were starting freshmen who on the varsity O-line who did not start out the year in the program as offensive linemen. So not only are you playing a freshman on the offensive line in a varsity game, and they were playing Clackamas, who was a state title contender, but they also were kids who didn't start the year even on O-line, and they were freshmen. That's how down the numbers are in the PIL. That being said, Don Johnson Jr. took over this Jefferson program, and he waited, and he said, I will take over this program if and when only Coach Strickland can convince some of his basketball kids to come out and play football. There's program buy-in, and this is a monster win for Jefferson and the entire PIL, because let's be honest, in the non-conference slate, we've had entire years in the last 5 years that the PIL did not win a single non-conference game as an entire conference. So for them to get a win against a Southridge team that's no slouch is really impressive. Congratulations to Don Johnson Jr. and the Jefferson Democrats.
So Rashad will be covering those schools for us all season long as well. Let's take a break. Mike Lynch will have a SportsCenter update for you. We will look for some more final scores for you here as well, and then we'll have the scoreboard with the drum corps. They are back for another season with us. And run through as many of those as we have for you here this evening. It's only halftime at Last Check over on 910 ESPN Portland. The second half of the doubleheader up there between Union and Mountain View. So, unfortunately, I don't believe we will have Luke Anderson. So, we'll call on our friends at the Columbian for the scores that we have in the Greater St. Helens League tonight as well. We'll talk a little recruiting for you as well before we turn things over. We've got Ducks Insider coming up at 11 o'clock tonight for you as well. Once again, our final score here, Lake Oswego 42, West Salem 21. The scoreboard's coming up next. It's the Les Schwab Tires postgame scoreboard show here on 1080 The Fan.
You know us, we know football. And all the stadium parking lots you're peeling out of right now. The Les Schwab Tires post-game scoreboard show on the Power Rents Game of the Week on 1080 The Fan, the radio.com app, and 1080thefan.com.
Jason Swigart, Andrew Nemec back here at West Salem High School after Lake Oswego opened with a 42-21 victory over West Salem, looking to defend its 6A state championship from a year ago.
We tried to get Casey Filkins on the phone. We messaged him, and he said there's too much excitement on the bus. You know what? They're the defending state champs. It doesn't change the fact that they're very happy to get a week one.
Well, no, and you're probably happy for guys getting in for the first time. You want to welcome a guy like J.J. Wooden in. Gabe Olvera had two touchdowns coming in as a reserve, so especially the guys that have been there, they understand this is a tradition with Corey and the program that's been passed down, and older brothers and, you know, have been playing for him for so long now that that's one of the reasons why programs like Lake Oswego have been able to maintain it, because they care about each and every player and each and every opportunity to play.
It's true. And before the game, as you were starting the pregame, I'm frantically messaging Jackson Laurent and Michael Mercep, a pair of all-state performers for Lake Oswego last year. They wanted the live link to listen into the show and listen into the play-by-play in the game. And that just speaks speaks to the community that this Lake Oswego team has built and why they are so successful, because even after you move on, you're still a part of the Lakers family.
All right. We have the finals are starting to roll in, so let's cue up the drum corps as they are with us here once again. Thanks to Mike Lynch for big helps and everybody who has been texting and tweeting at us throughout the evening. If you don't hear your team score and you are at the game, please pass it along. 55305 on the Better You Today text line. And we'll try and get it on the air for you here before we are off. But as always, we start with the top 10, 6A. These are the OSA Today coaches preseason rankings. Number one, Lake Oswego, we mentioned 42-21 over number 9, West Salem. Casey Philkins partying it up on the bus. 18 carries, 212 yards on the ground, 3 touchdowns, had a couple of catches for 36 yards as well. Number 2, Jesuit. Once again, all the talk about Lake Oswego, about Central Catholic, Sheldon, and West Lynn. Jesuit being overlooked.
Jesuit's not overlooked.
There's no sizzle. Well, Ken Potter's not about sizzle.
Well, Ken Potter. That's Ken Potter's fault. Listen, they have the number one player in the state of Oregon in Andy Alfieri. Do you know they have the number one fullback in the nation? If you like old school football.
Well, how many schools actually use a fullback?
Not nationally, more than 17.
Okay.
And Logan Horton is the best one in America. Scouts who watch fullback, I know nothing about watching a fullback and being like, he's a five-star fullback. I've talked to people who know the position, and they say Logan Horton, had he played in the 70s or 80s and been a fullback, he would have been one of the most heavily recruited kids in America. That's how good he is at being a blocker. It's just we don't celebrate it the way we should.
All right. Well, they had no problem with Mountainside opening up with a league game, 28-3. So the Mustangs and the Fighting Manions out there starting to build that program. I think they have seniors for the first time this year with that program. So we'll see if they can take another step in that progression. You heard the wrap-up from Will Darkins. Number 3, Central Catholic, holding off number 5, West Lynn, 35-27. We'll have them next week at Hillsborough Stadium against Eastside Catholic. Number 4, Sheldon, a return game. Last year they had an ESPN game against Graham Kapowsin down there. I remember watching it from my wife's uncle's place in Columbus, Ohio, as we were out taking in the Oregon State beatdown at the Horseshoe.
And last year's game for Sheldon, they had no Michael Johnson Jr.
Exactly. And they all sorts of backups were filling in. They went up north and come up short 21-14 to Graham Kapowsin, one of the higher-ranked 4A teams in the state of Washington. Number 6, Tigard, handled Sunset 45-22. That game was close early on before the Tigers pulled away. And then we were watching it here. It was another top 10 matchup. Number 6, Tualatin. Number 10, Lake Ridge. All Timberwolves, 53-7. Watch out for them. They are the team this year that can crash the party when we get to the state semifinals.
So they have John Miller, and everybody knows about him, the co-TRL Defensive Player of the Year. They also have Luke Marion. His dad played with Deion Sanders, Emmitt Smith, and Troy Aikman on those really good Dallas Cowboys team, and he was a multi-time Pro Bowler. He was a star. So before the year, I said, okay, Luke Marion, prediction, bold prediction, he's going to block multiple field goals and punts this year. He blocked his first punt tonight. Luke Marion is the freakiest athlete in the state of Oregon. Mark it down. The kid can box jump some crazy thing like 50-something inches. Ooh. He's unbelievable.
We have our eye on week 8, Tualatin at Lake Oswego. We are keeping eye on that one. We may lock that in.
My sports pants are tight.
There
I'm
you
excited
go.
For that one.
Elsewhere, Oregon City holds off Grants Pass 41-39. The Pioneers, of course, back in the Three Rivers League. Lincoln, a 26-22 win over Canby. You heard from Rashad Taylor. Jefferson getting a win on the road for the PIL, 28-22 over Southridge. Aloha, no problems with Century, 61-14. Westview on top of David Douglas, 44-32, so not missing J.J. Wooden there. Not the stiffest competition in the Scots, but I think Westview wants to try and build, keep that offense going. That's their signature. If they can score points, not have a ton of pressure on their defense, maybe get them a turnover here and there, and that could be the difference for them.
Westview has a couple of kids that are just absolutely phenomenal. The problem is they're sophomores, Aaron Jones and Darius Clemens. Darius Clemens, 6'2", 180-pound receiver, already has offers from Michigan State, Oregon State, Utah State, and Nevada. He visited Oregon State last weekend, and we'll get into everybody in the next segment or in an upcoming segment, but Darius Clemens will be visiting Oregon this weekend. That's how special he is. Oregon, Oregon State already on him. Michigan State's offered him. Special. They're just young, and they're going to continue to have to take their lumps early because they don't have a whole lot of O-line play, D-line play.
Barlow, Coach Summerfield out there. They've been trying to put that program back on the map the last few years. They get a 34-8 win over the Lava Bears of Bend. South Medford comes up north and handles the Eagles of Centennial 40-13. McMinnville, little 6A, 5A bullying going on there as they take down the Mustangs of Milwaukee 60-14. The Battle of Hillsboro out there. At Hare Field, 14-7, Glencoe gets the best of Hill High.
Wow. That's a huge rivalry. I covered the Hillsboro area exclusively when I first started at the Oregonian. They take that thing real serious. There is a
Dusty
party
and
in the
I
Glencoe area.
We were there for the miracle on Grant Street when Colt Light. Yeah, we had that game. We were fortunate enough to be there. It was bananas. So Glencoe, the Tide. We'll have the upper hand. Sherwood, last we checked, at a 52-9 lead over Sandy. The Bowmen, they're determined this year to kind of get back to where they expect to be. They are in the Pacific. Now, the Pacific League is back, so they're out of the gauntlet of the Three Rivers League, back in the Pacific League. So a little room to breathe this year.
Oh,
for
a lot
them.
Of room to breathe.
But Coach Lawrence wants to crank that thing back up.
And they've got some really good players. Nick Severson's one of the best defensive linemen in the entire state. They've also got Zach Carr, who's a really good linebacker. They have a good team, particularly up in that front seven. And I imagine they're going to out-muscle some teams, kind of some old-school Sherwood football this year. They've got some talent, they've got some size, and they've got a chance to be a pretty good team.
Liberty with a 49-14, a victory over Sprague. We mentioned the Benson-Madison game was canceled. Newburgh, a 42-16 winner over South Salem, and Roseburg squeaks by Mountain View 33-30. We go to the 5A level, the defending champion, number one ranked Thurston Colts, shut out number three Churchill 54-0.
Wow, statement.
Making a statement that last year was not a fluke when they won their first state title. But the team they beat was number two, Wilsonville. Coach Gunther said he's really young. He lost a ton of seniors off that team, and it showed in week one. They get shut out by seventh-ranked Crater 40-0. Number five, West Albany, a 40-7 winner over McKay. Number eight, Pendleton, losing to the number five 4A team, LeGrand, 36-14.
That's, you know what, in its own way in Eastern Oregon, that's a little bit of a rivalry. That used to be a much bigger game, and now they obviously have split off into different levels. But LeGrand, Pendleton, you know, Baker and all those schools in there, they care when they play each other. That's a big deal. Good win for LeGrand. Congratulations to LeGrand for that win over Pendleton.
Astoria surprises number nine Scappoose, 41-14.
Upset Central in that level.
Number 10 North Bend all over the number six team at the 4A level, Marshfield, there in a little backyard brawl, 51-0.
They ended up scoring. Marshfield scored right before the end of the game. 51-7. It was 51-0 late, but Marshfield scored 51-6 is the final.
51-6 the final there. Prairie, the Falcons from the Greater St. Helens League, coming across the river to play Sprague's Park Rose Broncos in at 3. 1A La Center takes down 2A Richfield 35-28. Hawkinson comes in ranked number one at the 2A level of Ginn, trying to win, but it's going to be much more difficult because they will not have UW-bound Sawyer Racanelli all season with that knee injury.
To give people an idea, if Sawyer Racanelli were in the state of Oregon and a prospect in the state of Oregon, he'd be listed as the number one player in Oregon. That's how good he is, and he's at Hawkinson, a 2A school. Incredibly talented, a big loss for Hawkinson.
Well, they managed just fine without him, a 48-7 win over Toppenish. Our game next week on 9-10 will be Archbishop Murphy coming down to play Hawkinson there. That should be a lot of fun. Kalama, a 26-7 winner over Woodland. Hoquiam beat Castle Rock 4 14-6. And Blanchette Catholic, a 27-14 winner over Stevenson at the 1A level. So those are all the scores as we have them. If we get any more here before we're off the air, we will certainly pass them on to you. But when we come back, time to talk a little recruiting with our man Andrew Nemec here, get a sense of some of the big names to keep an eye on, maybe some of those top seniors who have commitments but are still considering. We know a few of the big names and where they're going already, like Casey Filkins going to Cal, but who are some of the names that we expect to be hot commodities here right out of the chute as we roll on here at the Les Schwab Tires postgame scoreboard show on 1080 The Fan.
We're back with reports on tonight's high school football action across Oregon and Southwest Washington, and sports scores and headlines from across the country. The Les Schwab Tires postgame scoreboard show on the Power Rents Game of the Week on 1080 The Fan, the radio.com app, and 1080thefan.com.
Couple more scores to pass along to you. Redmond takes down St. Helens at the 5A level, 44-7. Hood River, a 36-22 winner over the Dalles. Wilson falls to South Eugene, 45-13. Crescent Valley, a 33-7 winner over North Salem. Back at the 6A level, Cleveland, the Fighting Dirts, beat Franklin, 31-14. So we're seeing a few more of those straggling scores wandering in, but we always like to kind of wrap things up with a little bit of recruiting. Of course, Andrew hosting the recruiting show Thursday, 7 o'clock throughout the season. Well, most of the season. We have a Thursday night game this year because of the Ducks Friday night game in October, and then you can check him out at 1080thefan.com and our Les Schwab Tires on-demand podcast section with the podcast that you and Jordan Johnson do throughout the season.
Yeah, the Andrew Nemec Recruiting Podcast, which really in the fall it has elements of recruiting. It is mostly, and it'll be this week as well, a breakdown of the week one action in the Oregon high school football season and then a preview of week two. We also usually take on a topic. Who are the top three running backs? Last week we did our preseason first-team All-State offense and defense. We try to go pretty deep diving, and sometimes that's 45 minutes long, but we try to post it where you can find out exactly where your matchup is. So if you want to hear a key matchup, you can go to that part in the podcast, give that a listen, and hear a pretty extensive breakdown of whatever game it is that's a potential game of the week.
Well, as we look at the recruiting landscape here for this 2019 or the 2020 class, for the seniors, you know, we saw Casey Filkins here tonight. We knew he was going to Cal, but for maybe some of those high ranking, we'll kind of take the 30,000 foot view here. Who are those top players from this senior class that maybe have had some offers but are holding off on getting serious about a commitment or hoping for a bigger offer here with some big performances early on?
The good news is not many. If you're waiting this long, you're in trouble. And I spent some time this summer talking to a couple of kids who were not committed and said, I don't know what you're waiting for. If you like a school at all, you need to pull the trigger because your offer's going away. The bad thing of that December signing period that now exists, it used to be February, and everybody treated it like a holiday, the recruiting holiday. Now there's one in December. The problem with that is kids are kind of being forced and asked to commit earlier and earlier, and if they don't, they're getting their scholarship offer pulled. And they don't call it pulling the scholarship offer, they just call it a non-committable offer at that point. And almost every program in America is doing that at this point. So luckily, almost all of the top seniors in the state of Oregon are off the board. A few of them are visiting Oregon here this weekend, including Seth Figgins, the transfer we mentioned earlier. He's at Sheldon now, 6'7", 235 pounds. He was in California, and as a sophomore, they considered him one of the top 10 tight ends in America. He broke his forearm, came back too early, and re-broke it in the first or second day of things. So he's missed 18 months of football, almost all of his sophomore year, almost all of his junior year. But again, 6'7", 235 pounds. If you're looking for a comp, I actually thought before he got hurt, he reminded me a lot of Spencer Webb, who we obviously saw in that Auburn game make some plays. He's kind of a hybrid wide receiver tight end. Look for him to have a really big season. He's visiting Oregon this weekend. Darius Clemens is a class of 2022 wide receiver. We talked about him earlier as well. Westview wide receiver, offers from Michigan State and Oregon State. Visited Oregon State last weekend, visiting Oregon this weekend. Amarion Winston, That name sounds familiar, right? Because more it's Winstons. Another Winston. Not more Winstons. They're fantastic to watch. You love watching them. I love watching them. Lamar's at Oregon. Elijah's at USC. Amarion Winston went to a camp this summer against the best juniors and seniors in the nation, including the number two running back and number two all-purpose back in the country, and he dominated those guys in one-on-one drills. Amarion Winston going to be a really, really, really good one. Keith Brown is the number one inside linebacker. Now, we mentioned class of 2020 guys are largely committed.
Yeah.
Class of 2021 guys are not. And the absolute unquestioned headliner in the state of Oregon for the class of 2021 is Lebanon linebacker Keith Brown. He's listed as the number one inside linebacker in America. He is hearing from the SEC, the Big Ten, the ACC, visiting Oregon this weekend. He likes Oregon. Oregon is a very, very serious contender in his recruitment. I would consider them, even if he doesn't list his favorites right now, I would say Oregon is the favorite. Again, the number one inside linebacker in America, and he's not even the headliner this weekend because that belongs to Noah Sewell. His brother, his oldest brother, Gabriel Sewell, is playing for Nevada. His brother that's closest to him in age, so his slightly older brother, Panay Sewell, obviously is Oregon's left tackle. He's going to check out the game, and oh yeah, by the way, Oregon seems to be the leader for his services. He's a five-star linebacker, the number two inside linebacker in the nation, and if he commits to Oregon, he would be like the third highest rated defensive prospect ever to commit to Oregon and the highest rated linebacker ever to commit to the University of Oregon. He'll be in town this weekend, so a really nice list, a small list, but a really nice list for Oregon and Mario Cristobal.
Well, we're talking here with recruiting as we wrap things up here from West Salem High School. So we're really focusing more on the 2021 class at this point, I guess. Who are the, and you can include if there's a senior in there, who are the highest rated prospects of the juniors and seniors who are not yet seriously committed or focused on particular schools? Who's everybody looking at in the state of Oregon?
Yeah, unfortunately, again, it's a really down couple of years for top prospects. Keith Brown is a good prospect. We just saw J.J. Wooden. J.J. Wooden's considered arguably the number one offensive prospect in the state of Oregon, and we saw him throw two picks and struggle, but he's 6'4", 210 pounds, and has got a really good arm, so you're kind of having to dream on kids right now. Keith Brown's a bona fide prospect, number one inside linebacker in the nation. Darius Clemens, the Westview wide receiver in the class of 2022, is a bona fide player. Maybe the only guy in the class of 2020 right now that I just am kind of in disbelief, or maybe there's two, that just blow me away, that just how do they not have more offers than they do? They should absolutely have more offers. We'll even go three to include an extra name. Calvin Souders, the Central Catholic wide receiver, caught a touchdown pass tonight. 6'3", 180 pounds. Doesn't really have many offers at all. He deserves multiple offers. Richard Kennewell, to me, is a Pac-12 outside linebacker. A phenomenal talent. A first-team All-State player at receiver a year ago. I actually like him better at outside linebacker. He has nothing. I mean, if I'm Portland State, I'm falling all over myself to get out to Clackamas High School to offer that kid. He should have Boise State. He should have Eastern Washington. He should have any, you know, mid-major FBS and all the FCS schools, at least, if not an Oregon State and a Cal. Richard Kennewell's fantastic. And then Marquise Brown. Marquise Brown was the defensive player of the year in the Metro League last year. In his conference last year. He was also a first-team All-State wide receiver. Marquise Brown is 6'4", 180 pounds, and I know for a fact, got to be careful with names here, but know for a fact that there were college programs who went to a camp expecting him to be there so they could offer him in person. Unfortunately, he no-showed, and by doing that, it raised some questions. Yeah. So he's looking for offers. And some of these programs now are waiting to see how that senior film is and to see how his grades are and see how everything goes. And I'm not saying there's a question with the grades. Just make sure he checks every other box before they offer, because they were ready and then they didn't get to see him. Marquise Brown is like the hidden gem in Oregon right now. Guarantee you he gets multiple offers. And by the way, had a huge night tonight. Everything on Twitter said he had a big night.
You can follow his work at OregonLive.com. You can hear him every Thursday night, 7 o'clock with the recruiting show. And you can find the podcast as well at 1080thefan.com on the Les Schwab on-demand section.
Now, you told me I don't talk enough, so I should definitely try to talk more. How did I do there?
It was great.
Oh, good.
It was perfect as we wrap things up here tonight. It was an impressive showing from Casey Filkins. Once Lake Oswego kind of got their sea legs, they trailed 14-7 early, and then Casey Philkins, three big touchdown runs over 200 yards on the ground. The future Cal Bear leading his number one-ranked Lakers to a 42-21 victory over West Salem. That'll wrap things up for us tonight. Again, next Friday we'll be at Hillsborough Stadium. Central Catholic will see if they hold the number three ranking or move up. Don't know how they do with the top two teams winning, but they will take on the number one 3A team in the state of Washington. Eastside Catholic will be there, 6:45 pregame, 7 o'clock kickoff. Should be a fun one. Thanks to Will Darkins and Rashad Taylor, our field reporters, for their work tonight. Huge thanks to Mike Lynch back in the studio for holding down the fort. Big thank you to our new onsite engineer, Dakota, out here with us. Things running flawlessly here from West Salem. That'll do it for us. Tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. Center and St., 11, the Mario Cristobal Coaches Show reprisal. Then Game Day Extra kicks in at noon. Dirt will be down with Anthony Newman at Autzen Stadium, taking you up to the broadcast of the Ducks Network starting at 2:30. Dusty will be in the studio back here on the Fan for the postgame scoreboard show at 9 o'clock. Over on 910, 1230, we have Texas A&M at Clemson. 6:30, we have USC and Stanford. So that is the lineup tomorrow. Plenty of college football for you, whatever you're doing.
You're pretty much set for life in 24 hours there.
Pretty much. And then we got NFL. Seahawks will be right here on the Fan, 11 a.m. Following Mike and Rashad Sports Sunday. Our doubleheader on 9:10 will feature the second game will be the Colts and the Chargers. First games will be the Rams and the Panthers. That'll get going at 9:30. So football all weekend long between the Fan and 9:10 ESPN Portland. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. We can't wait to talk to you next Friday from Hillsborough Stadium. For Andrew Nemec, I'm Jason Swigard. Have a very good night.
Red 18, hut,
hike! This has been the Les Schwab Tires Postgame Scoreboard Show. Join us tomorrow morning for College Game Day, the Sinner and the Saints Tailgate Show, Oregon Ducks Football, and the top national college games. We're back next week for high school football action, brought to you by Power Rents, your local Les Schwab Tire Center, Biggs Chicken, and by Sherway Building Centers. Thanks for listening to Portland's sports leader, 1080 The Fan, the radio.com app, and 1080thefan.com.